It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
The pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum of Solace 101. I've been wanting to say that for a long time. We are going to look at a few things this week, and I want to begin really with the whole question of the divide in our society between rich and poor. Now, there was a couple of news items this week concerning the rise of the Giga Mansion in the hills of Los Angeles. A new kind of mansion is emerging. Huge houses, vastly expensive. Property developer Bruce Makowski, speaking from the Sun Deck of a $250 million house.
I think it's the feeling when you're in this house that you just feel like you're sitting on top of the world.
This can be your happy place. And I mean, it really is quite extraordinary what is going on with this. And this is one of a number of houses along the same lines. Makowski goes on to say, if you go back 8 years, a 100-foot boat was seen as a big boat. Today, if you don't have a 250 to 300-foot boat, you're not one of the players. I'm not one of the players, Al.
You'd know where to fit it in Dundee at the port.
A $250 million boat, it's a toy, a $100 million plane, it's a toy. If you have that much money, why not have your house as a toy?
After being on these big boats and you see how every inch is curated, what I wanted to do is I wanted to take 8 really important ingredients and put them all in a house.
And apparently there are 130 or so native Californian billionaires. Now, the level of opulence in this house, 150 pairs of speakers outside the house, 300 pairs of speakers inside the house. House is on 4 levels, daylight on every level, an 11,000 square foot play area, 55 phones in the house, 7 full-time staff, 130 art installations, $250,000 stainless steel candy wall, 40-seat Dolby amphitheater.
What on earth is a candy wall?
It's where you put up sweets. You just go and collect your sweets wherever you want.
A candy wall? Never heard of that.
A candy wall. Yep. Well, you're learning things on this, Quantum. It's the best theatre on the planet with 57 speakers and 16 subwoofers. Everything has to be the best.
Who lives in a house like this? David, it's over to you.
Now, what gets me about that? Let me tie it in with two other things. George Osborne, our former chancellor, has just accepted a new job with Blackwood's banking hedge fund type organization. 48 days per year, and he gets paid £650,000. Now, he's still an MP, and he's being paid that not, I suspect, because of his financial expertise, but because of his connections. This is how the other half live. This is the world that, for example, the Obamas were talking about having a book deal for $60 million. Tony Blair and charges something like £100,000 per speech. You know, here's the interesting thing. People like Osborne and people like these Californian billionaires, they're the ones who've got the tech companies who are driving the social change in the name of equality. Well, how about equality? How about everybody gets to live in a £100 million house? No, of course not. That's not where they're at. That's not where they're going to go. It's a very strange kind of equality. So we have our social progressives who are our multi-billionaires. And let me just, a very interesting side effect of this in The Spectator. James Bartholomew. I thought this was a fascinating and really good insight. Let me just read this quote to you. People talk of a culture of entitlement amongst those who live on benefits, but the elite has its own entitlement culture. And he's not talking here about the multi-billionaires. He's talking about people within our culture overall who are the haves. They think that because they studied English literature at Durham, they understand the world better than a plumber in Croydon. They think they are superior and therefore their views should prevail. They also think they are more morally superior because they hold to the views which they were told were virtues. Anyone who appears not to subscribe to these views must of necessity be a sinner or else appallingly misled by the Daily Mail or some other evil force. It is outrageous to the elite that the work of the devils should prevail. They are virtuous. They know best. They are the chosen ones. They have only a token belief in democracy. They expect and intend to prevail. Well, I think that that is true, and I think the intolerance that we're seeing, the growing gap between rich and poor, I think it's all tied together. And I think those who are listening to this, who would describe themselves as left-wing and liberal and yet buy into that agenda, you are harming the poor in every single way, and you are providing the super wealthy with an excuse to make even more money for themselves. And I would argue from a Christian perspective, that is something that is completely wrong. Now let's turn on to Jenny Murray. Now, Jenny Murray is the presenter of a program I don't listen to because it's called Women's Hour.
Good morning. Today is International Women's Day, and we've been asking women around the world what's on their mind today.
The thought went through my mind, when's Men's Hour and when's International Men's Day?
It's in November.
Oh, there is an International Men's Day.
Yeah, there is one. There is
one. Well, I'm going to celebrate it. And I look forward to the press celebrating it. But, you know, that's fine. I'm not a woman, though tomorrow I might decide to be. I mean, that's up to me. I can be whatever I want to be. Except according to Jenny Murray, the presenter of Women's Hour, who's one of the BBC's stalwarts and who is a uber-feminist, interesting person, she's facing calls to be banned and told to shut up and all the rest of it. And guess why? Because she says that a man who says that he's a woman is not a woman. And she refuses to have this disconnect between gender and biological sex. As we pointed out before, there's this growing backlash amongst members of the feminist movement against the way that transgenderism is attacking and destroying, actually, femininity and feminism. Interesting times. Just a wee note, authors who fear causing offence can now call upon sensitivity readers to vet their works. There's a US agency which promises to identify problematic language and internalise bias on the page. It has a range of readers who list their areas of expertise, such as gay relationships or gender fluidity, and they only charge $250 per reading. So, Al, I think that we should get hire this company so that they can listen to Quantum before we put it out, so it has a sensitivity reading, just in case we're going to upset people. Is that okay?
We don't have the budget for that, but maybe if listeners would like to contribute, this is...
yeah, you know, get lost. Sorry. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. Just get over it, snowflakes. Speaking of censorship and being driven from public life, thanks to all of those who commented on the skit that we showed from Tracy Ullman. And maybe two things I want to mention. We put a link to an article on the Spectator on Christians being driven from public life. And this is because of an SNP member of parliament who turned up at a committee on Ash Wednesday, Caroline Monaghan. She's the MP for Glasgow North West. And she turned up with a cross on her forehead. And this seems to have created a little bit of fuss. I wouldn't say too much, to be honest. But nonetheless, Stephen Daisley, who himself knows what it's like to be banned, has written a very interesting article in The Spectator, beginning, "They will hate you because of who I am," Jesus says in the Gospels. He forgot to add, "And the ones who don't have a clue will point and laugh." And speaking of censorship, let's return to good old Facebook. The ongoing saga. I still get every day invitations from impossibly beautiful women telling me that I am their desired mate. And if only I would just click on their site or whatever. Some, as I've said already, are extraordinarily explicit, and I report it to Facebook and I always get the same reply. This does not violate our community standards. Well, the BBC conducted an interesting experiment. It's good that they're keeping up with Quantum of Solace, but they decided that they would look and find what sexualized images of children they could find on Facebook and then report it. Now, the BBC reported 100 photos, and yet 82 came back with, "This does not violate our community standards." These images were under 16s in sexualized poses, pages aimed at paedophile, and so on. Now, but get this. Facebook reported the BBC to the police for sharing with Facebook, Facebook photos. Unbelievable.
What?
They reported them to the police for the sharing these images. They said, "We've reported the child exploitation images. The matter is now in the hands of the authorities." But here's the thing. Facebook have this bot. They have a filter machine, obviously. And you report things to them. And it's extraordinary what goes against their community standards. I think if I reported Jenny Murray's remarks on transgender, for example, it's possible that could go against their community standards. But sexually explicit images, including sexually explicit images of children, in many cases do not go against their standards. That says a great deal. And speaking of which, sexually explicit image, let's return again to someone we haven't spoken about for a while, our old friend Russell Brand, who's had a go against porn.
What does softcore porn do to us? And what does porn in general do to both men and women and the way we relate to each other?
And he's talked about the harm that porn does and so on. Now, we said last week that we think paedophilia, prostitution, pornography and polygamy, they're the four things that in our culture, that's the road we're going to head down. Brand is absolutely spot on in what he says about it. He talks about how it dehumanizes in so many ways. And I think from a Christian perspective, we would say that all the time. He talks about the difference between hardcore and softcore porn. He says, not that much difference. He says this:
"Our attitudes towards sex have become warped and perverted and have deviated from its true function as an expression of love and a means for procreation, because our acculturation, the way we have designed it and expressed it, has become really, really confused."
Now, we couldn't put that better. It really, that is what we've been saying all along. It is good to have Russell Brand say that. It is good to have people recognize it. And I just wonder when any of our governments are going to deal with the epidemic of pornography that is across our media and in our schools and throughout our society.
I heard a quote from a priest that said, "Pornography is not a problem because it shows us too much. It's a problem because it shows us too little." I don't think what that priest meant is he would like to see more gynecological and more sort of filthy shots of things. I think what he was saying is that pornography reduces the spectacle of sex to a kind of extracted physical act.
And I think that's true. I think it's forgetting the emotional, the connectional, the spiritual side of sex. And we've just turned sex, in effect, into a physical act, into just entirely an animal act. So it's good to have Russell Brand pointing all of that out. This is Ben Carson.
"They work not for themselves, but for their sons and their daughters, and their grandsons, and their granddaughters, that they might have an opportunity in this land. That's what America is about. A land of dreams and opportunity."
Dr. Ben Carson, he is the new Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, and he's a Christian. He's an African-American, and he said this:
"There were other immigrants who came here in the bottom of slave ships, worked even longer, even harder for less. But they too had a dream that one day their sons, daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, great-grandsons, great-granddaughters might pursue prosperity and happiness in this land."
Cue outrage. Cue lots of witty remarks. "Since Ben Carson thinks slaves were immigrants, then he must think Jews were guests at the Nazi summer camp. Outright condemnation. Shock, horror. Except President Obama said pretty well exactly the same thing."
"Life in America was not always easy. It wasn't always easy for new immigrants. Certainly it wasn't easy for those of African heritage who had not come here voluntarily, and yet in their own way were immigrants themselves. There was discrimination and hardship and poverty. But like you, they no doubt found inspiration in all those who had come before them. And they were able to muster faith that here in America, they might build a better life.
So what I want to understand is this, and someone can maybe explain this. Those of you who were really upset or outraged or what an idiot or all the rest of it about Ben Carson, what do you think about President Obama?
His life in America was not always easy.
Is he an idiot?
It wasn't always easy for new immigrants.
Didn't he know what he was talking about?
Certainly it wasn't easy for those of African heritage who had not come here voluntarily, and yet in their own way.
Is he anti-African American?
Were immigrants themselves.
See, what's happening here is the biases that we have. So we're very easy to register outrage or dismay or mockery at someone who we think we know and who we think we disagree with. But someone whom we agree with, we just excuse. Now, I actually think, in context, what Ben Carson said was fine, and in context, what Obama said was fine. And I do think that it is just awful the way that our society and media is so polarized, and social media does not really help this. And I think it's really disappointing when those who are in leadership in our society, politicians, journalists, and others, tweet or Facebook these kinds of comments and mockery when they don't back off and consider the wider perspective or the wider context. Ironically, Carson was making a pro-immigrant speech, but who cares? If you can mock him, so what? Okay, we're gonna leave you with something. And as you can tell, you can keep praying for my voice because I have this, this is now my seventh week of having this particular cold. I won't go into too many details, but, you know, life's pretty miserable for me, so maybe I should just end it all. Eh? Maybe that's it. You know, I feel quite, this cold's never, ever going to end, and so that's it. Well, I guess we shouldn't be joking about this. This is really, really sad, actually. Dutch health and justice ministers are proposing legislation for assisted suicide for those who, quote, feel their life is complete so that they be allowed to finish that life in a manner dignified for them. Oh, remember how assisted suicide for people who've got 6 months to live are in constant pain and so on? How if that happens and you dare say it's going to be a slippery slope, don't you dare use the slippery slope argument? The reason we use the slippery slope argument is because it's true. And here is another example of it. In 2015, 4% of all deaths in the Netherlands were euthanasia. My life is complete. How do we ever know that? Maybe we need to back off and think a wee bit about what life actually is. And I think, you know, maybe I want to leave it with this. I think that to know Christ is life, that God gives life, that we don't have the right to take life, that yes, our life will one day be complete and ended. But it's the Lord who determines that. It's not us. And we shouldn't determine that. And we need to know real life. And to know Christ is to know life eternal. I know several people. As a minister, I'm constantly involved with people who are dying. And I have to tell you this. This week I was with somebody who told me how their faith had just been boosted incredibly by being in the presence of somebody who is dying and who is a believer, and who is in some degree of pain, and yet whose hope in Christ is just so amazing. This Dutch route is the road to hell. This Dutch route is this idea of human beings acting as God, determining even when people are born and when we die. No. We have to learn to leave these things to the Lord. And on that note, leave you and see you next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.